This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago. 6:11 in the morning. Hi, welcome. We're back from Des Moines. Glamorous, beautiful Des Moines. I had a nice time there, and the people of Iowa are lovely. Thank you for the warm greeting. Thanks for everybody. And a lot of GN listeners in Des Moines.
There are a ton of GN listeners, including the governor of Iowa, who immediately, I said WGN Radio, introduced myself, and he said, Orion Samuelson. Yeah.
He's a groupie.
He is a groupie.
Governor Branstad's an Orion groupie.
He is a groupie.
I've met a lot of very nice people, and don't believe anything you read knocking the Iowa caucus process, and don't buy into any of this. We've got to get rid of Iowa as the first state. There's something very cool about Iowa and New Hampshire, small states both, going 1 and 2. Let's keep it the way it is, and let's fix the system. Not the primary part, this caucus primary part, but the system.
Right, absolutely. And you know what? The caucuses, I would even argue, wouldn't you think, after having watched a couple, are almost foolproof. You can't make a mistake when you're saying 1, 2, 3. You're counting off your votes as opposed to putting a ballot in a ballot machine. You don't know if there's hanging chair.
I'm glad you said counting your votes. This reminds me. Hillary Clinton did not win 6 coin flips. As it turns out, Bernie Sanders won some of the coin flips as well. Mm-hmm. So that was bad reporting by whoever was covering those particular caucuses in the other parts of the state.
Yeah, I heard someone say, oh, she should play the lottery.
Yeah, and also this notion that it may have been rigged.
It's not rigged.
Bernie has plenty of positive press, and he should move on and not worry about Iowa at this point.
No, because he's probably going to take New Hampshire, so he'll be fine.
Now, the people of Iowa, of course, in the political side, on the Democrat side, are worried about a repeat of 2012 where Santorum won, but Romney got the initial credit. Mm-hmm. So they'd like that not to happen. So I'm sure they're looking at their records. I'm sure they're checking their coins. But we enjoyed it, and the process worked, and it was a good kickoff to this lunacy that is campaign 2016. And as I said, Andre will be in New Hampshire. A couple other things going on. Dave, MLB Network is going to air the Harry Caray documentary tonight.
It ran last night.
Oh, it was last night.
Yes. And in fact, I watched it. I was taping it and watching the Hawks and going back and forth. And
are you in it?
I'm not in it, but it's a great show. Okay. I really enjoyed it.
We talked about Corey Crawford's tremendous night last night. I just hit on a bunch of things we'll cover at some point during the show. The teachers union for the city of Chicago may be on a suicide mission. The Sun-Times points this out, what they're demanding versus what they could possibly get, including or excluding maybe for the moment what they're entitled to, is not good. And there's only so much money, and this is not about winning a fight. This is about what's doing right for the teachers, and it's turned into another fight. And frankly, the teachers union seems to be making it much worse than it needs to be.
I think they've completely backed themselves into a corner with rejecting the deal on Monday. Okay, so you're basically taking a stance and saying no. You know, you're putting your hand up and saying
talk
to the hand. But on the same side, now you have the state saying, well, not only the state is still seriously considering the bankruptcy option, and also saying we're not going to fund you. And now you get Forrest Claypool saying, well, we need to make $100 million in cuts. So they're really backed into a
corner. I'm just wondering who gets up in the morning and goes, you know, I've looked at that Forrest Claypool character, and he looks like a guy that wants to screw kids to me. He looks like a guy that wants to take money away from children. The whole financial thing is a disaster. You got to work together.
It's a mess.
Right now, the teachers union looks like they'd fit well into Springfield.
It's an absolute mess.
Governor really is the evil governor trying to bankrupt Chicago schools and take control of them, you couldn't have done anything more perfectly for him than to take the stance the teachers union took this week.
Yeah.
Playing right back into his hand.
And by them saying, too, this is an act of war, I don't know what cards they have left.
It's ridiculous. It really is. Super Bowl previews out the wazoo. And this is where the wazoo is. All week long, and we've got some more stuff on that coming up today as well. And plus, we're going to do celebrity Super Bowl picks. Today's celebrity Super Bowl pick will come from actor Ethan Hawke, who will be on the show later. And we'll ask him who he's picking. Later in the week, legendary sportscaster and sometime criminal Pat O'Brien. And we got some local folks as well.
Are we doing picks to keep in the tradition of our football? Okay.
On Friday. Oh, David Axelrod will do a celebrity football pick as well.
Why don't we do a Super Bowl Wang Dang Doodle fantasy thing?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Sounds like a great idea, Dave. Yeah, great idea.
Well, as long as everybody's on board. It's 6:15. Mary, did you watch the O.J. Simpson part one?
No, I taped it. Didn't
Turns out
chance.
He killed them both. I don't want to ruin it for you. Spoiler alert.
And the
O.J.'s
dog?
O.J.'s a murderer. It really feels like a soap opera. You know, you thought maybe you'd get like the big picture movie thing. There's a lot of angst.
Well, are they in the courtroom? They're obviously not in the courtroom yet.
No, at the end of episode one, we haven't even gotten to the white Bronco chase yet.
Oh, okay.
Shh, don't say it. Don't spoil it.
And the dog's still okay. What was the dog's name?
What was the dog's name?
Oh, I forgot the dog's name.
Well, I just remember Cato.
Cato.
No, that wasn't
the dog. That was the guy that lived with OJ.
No, I thought they named the dog after Cato. I'm being very serious.
Oh, they did?
I thought they did, yeah.
How would Cato know the difference if he was being called or the dog was being called?
Well, that's a good question. One's,
did it matter?
One has a line of men's clothing now. Well, I say that loosely. It's those Zumba pants, I think.
Yeah, Cato's with slacker clothes.
Slacker clothes, yeah.
Hey, those Zumba pants are fun.
It's 6:16. Aaron Katursky from ABC News coming up. He is in New Hampshire, and let's get to him after we take care of traffic and a couple of things. Here's Mary.
I think some people were disappointed that I didn't go in the debate. If I had it to do again, I would have done the exact same thing. And the reason is, do you know why? Because I raised $6 million for the vets in 1 hour.
You just got to wonder what color the sky is in his orange-haired world.
Well, he did raise $6 million for the vets.
Okay, chicken and egg, though, right?
Yes.
Because the idea for the night against the debate came up after he threw his debate tantrum and decided he wouldn't do the debate. Ugh. It's not like we're going into ancient history here. Aaron Katursky from ABC News joins us live from New Hampshire. Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning.
And, you know, we saw each other in Des Moines. It was great to see you, by the way. Now you're in New Hampshire. Do you have state shock? It's kind of like whiplash, I would suppose.
Well, it's just a far different process in a different kind of an electorate here, too. And so it's different, but the campaigns are, you know, largely the same. No one's made any adjustments. Donald Trump said he probably needed to do a little better on the ground game, but he didn't mention any adjustments to his campaign. He's in Arkansas today and then comes back here, says he'll add events to try and do a little bit more in the get out the vote, see some more people. But there's also this kind of town hall thing that doesn't exist as much in New Hampshire, where you know, the candidates are just going out in small areas to try and meet as many people as they can. Just like Iowa, the folks here in New Hampshire want to judge for themselves and have an in-person assessment of these candidates.
I've not been to New Hampshire, but my understanding is because of the small nature of the state, and I don't know if people know this, Andrea, but the state is actually 8 feet by 4 feet wide.
It's a little bigger than that, but very small.
But the candidates literally bump into each other all the time, right?
Sure. And you can't go anywhere without a candidate event today. They're all over the place, many of them doing 3 and 4 events a day because there's such a short window between Iowa and New Hampshire. And historically, the people here often wait until Iowa to make up their mind. And they don't always go the same way. In fact, very often they go in a different direction, which may reflect the different makeup of the electorate here.
Aaron, the assumption is that Bernie Sanders will take New Hampshire. What does Hillary need to do to either cut that lead, or I don't know if she will beat him, but to inch closer to that lead?
On one hand, she's been going around the state saying, you guys know me, I've been here campaigning since 1991, which is crazy true when you think about it. For 30 years, she's been here either campaigning on her own or with former President Clinton. And so she's, on one hand, this is almost like home state advantage. On the other hand, she'll tell you that Sanders has the home field advantage because he's from a neighboring state. And Sanders is going around saying, you know, Clinton won here in 2008. She's very familiar with the people here. So he's not taking anything for granted. They're both trying to manage expectations, even as polls show Sanders with a significant lead.
And I know you got to run, but the other thing people need to keep in mind, this pride in independence is more than just that. It's literal, right? In that, my understanding is there are more independents in the state of New Hampshire than there are registered Republicans or Democrats.
That's true. That was true in Iowa, too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And look, they can participate if they want to, and they're always a wild card. We've met people here who said they're deciding between Trump and Sanders, reflecting the kind of voter that both of them are drawing. But it's an interesting choice if that's really who you're weighing. So there's still some days left for the candidates to make their closing arguments. Today, Jeb Bush goes with his mom, the former first lady. Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are going to be participating in a Democratic forum, not a debate, but a forum where they each get a chance to answer questions unilaterally for about an hour. And they're trying to work on one more debate for the Democrats before the primary begins.
Aaron Kucharski, ABC News, thanks for getting on with us. We'll talk to you this week.
Thanks, Steve.
See you. And let's do this, 6:25, almost 6:26. And we will take a break, come back, and continue. Coming up here in a few minutes, Karen Conti on the law. And after 7 o'clock, State Comptroller Leslie Munger, she'll be holding a bake sale for the state where we all have to make brownies and then sell them.
It might help. Every penny's going to help.
Hard. In a moment at 720 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
6:40, and Karen Conti joins us. Congratulations on opening your new firm. And what is it called?
Good morning, Steve. Well, thank you. It's been, you know, quite chaotic, but it's been wonderful.
And what is the new firm called?
It's called Conti Law. And the only problem is, you know, that boss is really, really a problem.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could sit down and talk with her about her attitude.
Maybe.
The best place to get a hold of you at your new firm is how?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, same number, and kconti at kcontilaw.com.
All right, good. And like I said, congratulations. And also, Karen's going to be doing a series of videos that we will post that answer some frequently asked questions.
Yes, it's going to be exciting. We get the same questions all the time about wills and trusts and divorces. And so we thought we'd put that together. Your son is going to help out, and hopefully we'll post that on the website and get people some information.
And we'll give you a heads up on when that's happening, but that's coming soon. All right, so the People versus O.J. Oh, poor O.J. Simpson. Poor, he's so burdened. But the People versus O.J. Simpson is now a 10-part series on FX. What is the update for him legally? Is he going to die in prison?
He probably will. I believe he's serving what is still 33 years for the word is kidnap and among other things. And that was when he was trying to take his Heisman Trophy and some of his other
memorabilia and a deal that went bad with some former friend of his. And he showed up in a room with some thugs and one of them had a gun and they wouldn't let anybody out. And there you go.
Well, I think that's a really good case for overcharging him. And, you know, I don't think there's anyone who's crying for him about that. He walked away from the first one where most people thought he was guilty. And so they overcharged him and the jury bought it. And people don't do well in prison, Steve. Everyone thinks it's a cushy life. But the food is bad. There's not a lot of exercise. There's a lot of stress because guess what? There's a lot of bad people there. It's depressing, especially given the lifestyle that OJ led. And, you know, people don't do well there. They have heart attacks. They have all kinds of diseases. There's no good medical attention. I wouldn't be surprised if he died very, very soon.
We're told that he is being tested for CTE as well, the concussion syndrome deal that's been such big news in the National Football League, that could be a degenerative brain condition as well, though certainly doesn't explain any of his previous behaviors. Before we move on from this, however, do you have any sense, because I do not, do you have any sense of who owns the rights to his story? I know this is based on a Jeffrey Toobin book, but I know the Goldmans have never gotten any money from the civil case settlement. And I think people would have the question, is there any way O.J. Simpson gets paid for the story of his trial being told on TV? There isn't, is there?
No, there isn't. I mean, this is a historic story. This would be the same as a story about Abraham Lincoln or anybody who's famous. You don't own really your rights to your story. If you wrote a book and it's a fiction and you're copyrighted, of course, they would have to pay you. But because he's a person in history, that's fair comment. So people can write movies, people can write documentaries, and you're really not entitled to anything because your story is a matter of public record. So nobody's going to get paid here as to all these people who are depicted, like Marcia Clark and Robert Shapiro. Now, certainly if they said something or did something in the movie that was putting them in a false light or that was false altogether, they would have some right to sue for defamation. But generally speaking, there's some artistic license that they allow when they put on a show like this.
Karen,
so no one's going to make money on this.
Kind of a segue to that. Nicole Brown's family has been very vocal about the fact that nobody contacted them at all throughout the filming of this to get, you know, even a statement or a sentence or even confirm anything. Would they have a legal leg to stand on if they somehow thought that she was portrayed in a different way or a negative light?
Sure they could. But again, you know, some of these people, I've actually been on the other side of this, and I've had people come to me and say, you know, they depicted me this way or they put me in this light. And the law is just not very good because, like I said, there's a lot of license that they give people to portray people. Now, you know, having watched the first episode, I don't think they're going to do anything to disparage Nicole Brown. But there's no obligation on the part of a movie maker to go and say, let me ask you about her. Let me get the truth from you. They can do pretty much what they want. And now they're going to say probably it's based upon that Tubin book. So we basically did our research by following the book that was well-researched and well-written.
The oddness of the timing is that the other really famous, formerly thought of, all-around good guy, who turned out to be a very bad guy, is also in the news. So we'll do traffic here. We'll come back and talk about Bill Cosby's legal situation in a moment. First, 6:45, and time for your traffic trouble spots update with Mary. Sean Kingston, 26 today. Maura Tierney. I love Maura Tierney. She's 51. I think she's healthy. I think she's on the other side of that cancer battle.
And she
I hope that's the case.
She just won the Golden Globe for her performance in The Affair, which
that's
is
right.
Awesome. One of my favorite binge shows right now.
Nathan Lane turned 60 today, one of the funniest people ever. Morgan Fairchild is 66, and actress Blythe Danner is 73, Gwyneth Paltrow's mom. Mm-hmm. Gwyneth Paltrow told a funny story about Blythe Danner. She was on Chicago Hope, maybe? It was a medical show. Maybe it was more recent than that.
Was it St. Elsewhere?
I don't remember, but she was having trouble remembering her lines, and she had like an obstetrician scene of some sort, and they taped her lines in the inner thighs of the woman who had her legs in the stirrups.
That's one way to do it.
Karen Conti rejoins us, who also is a celebrity with a birthday today. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you so much. It's usually like the coldest, ugliest day of the year, but I think we're going to have a heat wave today, so that's not bad.
Not so bad at all. Now, we can't officially wish you a happy birthday today because we only do birthdays late on the show. So next Wednesday, we'll wish you a happy birthday.
Rules, rules, rules.
That's it. How odd is it that we have two of the people we got most wrong in our celebrity life, both in legal news today? We talked about O.J. O.J. was beloved. Bill Cosby was more beloved, and now what we know about Bill Cosby is beyond dark. What is his legal status?
Well, let me just add to that, you know, this movie that's going on, what I took away from it this first episode was, boy, they really handled him like he was a celebrity. I mean, everyone liked him. The police liked him. He was charming. Everyone talked about how great he was. And as a result, they sort of let him, you know, do the Bronco ride. They let him do all kinds of stuff that most people would be, you know, handcuffed for. And I think the same thing applies to Cosby. I mean, they let him skate on so many things, so many times, in so
right.
many jurisdictions because of that whole likability factor. This is a really interesting development. So he's being charged in Pennsylvania. And what his defense is he says, you know, years ago when this all came up and this woman charged him, Andrea Constant, the prosecutor said, listen, Bill, I don't think I can, you know, prosecute this to success. I think there's problems with the case. You waited a year. There's inconsistencies in her statement. Here's the deal. The deal in writing is you testify truthfully in a civil case against, you know, that she's filing against you, you waive your Fifth Amendment right, which you have an absolute right to bring, and I will never, ever prosecute you. And that's in writing. So now, 10 years later, the new prosecutor is a new sheriff in Dodge, and the prosecutor is prosecuting him. So, of course, Cosby is saying, you guys made a deal. I don't care if you're the new prosecutor or not. That agreement bound the office, and now Cosby shouldn't be prosecuted. And it's a pretty good argument because, listen, if a prosecutor says he's not going to do it, that should probably bind the office. I don't like the result of that, but that's probably what's going to happen here.
So the Simpson dies on the inside, Cosby dies on the outside, but they both have a living hell that they've created on their own.
That sums it up nicely.
It's depressing and amazing all at the same time.
Well, and it's amazing that people live this double life. And again, in this Simpson thing, you know, I have to say, I didn't really want to watch it. I'm going on some television shows talking about it, so I did have to watch it because I don't want to relive this that I've lived through before. But it is very interesting because it kind of puts in perspective that we had O.J., the charming, wonderful, talented guy that came from nothing, who was living this double life of being a monster at home with his wife, beating her up, you know, and people then later said, we knew that he was doing it, yeah. And he was a terror, and yet nobody did anything about it. And, you know, there's a lot of lessons about that, that people come in different packages, and we can't believe the exterior sometimes. I mean, even the Gacys of the world were charming and successful, and yet they have this other life in the dark. So, interesting story.
Well, it's a great danger of celebrity worship, right? Whether it's sports or movies or television, radio, whatever.
And they're more likely to get away with it. Think about it. If you have those inclinations to do bad things, most people get caught. Most people, get slapped on the wrist, and maybe they'll stop. But people who are celebrities have money, they have fame, they have access to beautiful women and to other things, and so they're going to get away with it much more easily. So it's not as surprising as we think it is. It's probably more likely that we have bad people in high offices and high places than we do in low places.
Fame and money doesn't make you a better person.
No, and a renewed call, too, for any woman who is in a situation like that to get some help. Call,
yeah,
reach
lots
out.
Lots of help, and you can always,
I think that's,
you can always call us.
Yeah, really. Steve will punch someone out.
Well, I'll come take them out, but I'm also saying that we have, as you do you, obviously, but we have access to people you may not even be aware of. So don't live that life. If you're being abused or threatened with the same, you need to let somebody know. And if you don't have anybody you feel you can talk to, call us.
That's right. And I have to tell you, I think the world is a little more friendly to domestic battery victims.
Yep.
Post-OJ. I tell you this because I have prosecuted these things, accompanied victims to court. And I've also defended these things, the people who actually did these things. So, I mean, I've been on both sides of it. And I see how people get treated in our courts here in Cook County. And everyone takes it seriously. And I think O.J. Simpson is one of the reasons, if there's one legacy, is that people don't want to be on the other side of this where we say, where were the prosecutors? Where were the police? That woman called the police over and over again, and it took years for her for him to even get arrested the first time, let alone he walked. He walked out of there with a community service, which he didn't do. So I think people take this more seriously, and that's a good thing.
I'll give you one more takeaway. Fame and money, and I mean this, fame and money don't bring more light to the bright side of your life. Fame and money help you hide the dark side. Mm-hmm. And that's almost irrefutable. If you can show me somebody who's remarkably famous and remarkably rich, who you're going, wow, look how great they are. And you truly know that from every aspect of them, great. But in more cases than not, the vast majority, whatever your dark side is, and for most of us, it's not that big a deal, but we all have one, you can hide it with fame and money.
Well, and the striving for money can keep you in line, I think. I think we're all working stiffs. We go to court every day. We strive to save money for our kids and do the things we do. But for people who don't need that kind of restraint, that kind of discipline, I think you have people who kind of walk off the edge. And you see this with celebrities at an early age, the Lindsay Lohans and the like, because there are no rules. There's no reason to get up in the morning to go to work like we do. And then they fall into other things like drugs and the like. So I guess we should consider ourselves lucky that we have productive lives.
That's why I scratched and clawed my way to the middle. That's why I slept my way to the middle. I know what goes on at the top, Karen. I want no part of it. Karen Conti, again, how do we reach you?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Happy birthday, Karen.
Unofficial.
Thank
unofficial.
You.
Unofficial. Unofficial. 6:58, back with the news next, 720 WGN. This is a medical song I want to play for you. There is a medical story about a syndrome called RBF syndrome. I'm going to get to it in a second. Let me explain the tie here. At 7:10 in the morning, why would I be talking about this? Because Hillary Clinton, whenever she gets excited, whenever she gets loud, what is the word we associate with her when she's loud? She's shrieky.
She's a loud woman.
Not even that. That's,
no,
that's,
are you going to call her the B word?
No, not at all. Okay. I'm saying a loud woman is fine. Said she's shrieky.
Shrill.
Shrill. Well, evil would be that laugh. But shrill and shrieky. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. It's not fair when women raise their voice to be tagged with shrill.
Or witchy.
Or
call
shrieky.
Like a witch or
I've never heard her called a witch unless Bill
well, not
did.
Her, but.
You know sometimes she can be a witch.
No. You have that khaki laugh.
But here's why I bring this up. Because when Hillary gets loud. Mm-hmm. You guys, it's not fair for women. It's not fair. Listen, I'll grant you this. There is a double standard. Because when Hillary gets loud and when women get loud, shrill and shrieky, that's the first place we go. Now, I will tell you this, and Dave, you can back me up on this, and if you don't, I know you're lying. When a woman gets loud and shrill and shrieky, when a woman's yelling, and in Hillary's case, it's to get over, right? It's mm-hmm. to be heard over the crowd. It reminds a man of thinking he's in trouble. From the time your mom yelled at you or your wife yelled at you, that's a visceral, instinctive response a man has to a woman yelling when she's angry.
I can understand that. Okay. So that's the whole root of it.
That's where it comes from. Now, you have to be able to balance that out. Go, wait, Hillary's not my mom. But that's where that instinct, that physical response comes from.
It isn't fair, though. We raise our voices and we get called, you know.
It's not fair. You ought to be able to be emotional. You ought to be able to raise your voice. But just as a way of understanding it, that's where men's minds go.
Right.
So I'm backing you up on this.
But you know I'm right.
I know you're right.
Yes.
I know what you're saying.
So why?
Your wife is
why,
listening.
Why?
My wife has never yelled at me.
Yeah, because you've never been in trouble.
No.
So why would the Elton John song be relevant at this point? From the Washington Post this morning. In a story by a woman named Caitlin Gibson, scientists have discovered what causes resting bitch face.
Oh, like Victoria Beckham?
Like Victoria Beckham, like Kristen Stewart, like Queen Elizabeth. This is called RBF syndrome, and there's money being spent on a study of RBF syndrome, resting bitch face.
What?
Yeah. Didn't Anna Kendrick say, oh yeah, she's a self-admitted RBF?
Yeah.
Sufferer?
Researchers in this study have enlisted something called Notice Face Reader. It's a sophisticated tool engineered to identify specific expressions based on more than 10,000 images of human faces. The software examines faces through a live camera, a photograph, or a video clip, maps 500 points on the human face, then analyzes the image and assigns an expression based on eight basic human emotions: happiness, sadness, anger, fear, surprise, disgust, contempt, or neutral. They established a baseline reading and then determined that women have RBF syndrome more than men. Because when a man has... All right, give me your RBF face.
Okay, ready?
Andrea can't do it. She's never unhappy.
What are you talking about? I saw it in the car all day yesterday.
just for the last 3 hours, though. All right, ready?
Okay. I can't squint. When you squint...
All right.
Just casual.
You can't look mad,
right?
I can't do it without trying to laugh. All right, wait.
Right. You're just casually angry, right? But here's the thing which makes it unfair for women. Because you can have that RBF face, and you could just be tired. Or you could be thinking about something that has nothing to do with anything related to you being bitchy.
Right.
But we think you're being bitchy because you're a female and you have that face.
That's right.
Dave... You give me your RBF face. That's Dave being masculine and angry. That's Dave being a man. He's manning up.
Or determined.
Focused, determined.
It looks like he's going to laugh at any second.
Let's
see.
This is a constant reminder of how much easier it is to be a dude than a woman.
Yeah.
This is
I can't believe there's a study on this.
Dave, I didn't ask you to do John Wayne.
Where's Orion when we need him? He would fight this.
He'd like the study. He would really be a fan of
this.
This
he would like, yeah. Oh, that's funny.
The cues are understated, but the machine I mentioned detects and interprets the expressions the same way humans do, but with one big difference. Face Reader is a piece of software, therefore immune to gender bias. So when it takes a look at things, it determines that RBF is not only a condition, and this is the part that would make Orion lose his mind, a condition that may be eligible for additional academic grants and further study. It is a condition that women have to address with all the other issues in their life to further their own career and personal interests.
And ways to treat it, just sit in a car with you guys for 6 hours.
Yeah, because we're a delight.
Uh-huh.
Because the idea is...
To diagnose it, I should say.
If you have chronic RBF, resting bitch face, and you go into a job interview, you might not even know you have that look on your face. But if you're sitting down with a male or even a female, because you know how tough women are on women, they're going to judge you by your RBF.
Like, look at Kanye. He's always kind of pouting.
Well, yeah, but Kanye, yeah. First off, Kanye's not coming into a job interview with me. You know, Kanye sits down with a job interview with me, I'm going to go, we're going to have to look at other candidates.
So were they trying to find a cure or just get plastic surgery?
They're trying to alert the public that this is a condition that could hinder women's ability to maximize their lives.
So
if Vince Lombardi, lost it, it would be Vince Lombardi is just a fabulous guy. Now, I want to hear that same clip, but now Vince Lombardi's in a dress.
What the hell's going on out here?
Now he's shrill and shrieky.
He's such a witch.
Right. Worry if you have RBF, the results of the study will be published in full this October. And members of the public are invited to submit their own faces for analysis, men and women alike. But the facial expressions that you exhibit, and we all have that, right? Like, because of my eyes, people think I'm either a weed addict or that I'm constantly tired. And by the way, it's B. You know, I just look like I'm sleepy. You're always smiling. Dave, you're always perplexed. But, you know, it's part of it's a delightful characteristic of yours. No, I would say Dave's always focused.
Focused.
He's focused. He's got a place to go today.
Determined.
He's got something to do.
Yes.
Kevin, you're always disinterested. Mary, you're always ready to tell us, knock it off, or we're not going to be able to go out to dinner tonight.
I think I have this. I think I got it.
You think you got RBF?
Yeah.
Let's see, Mary.
Can I, like, sue if I, you know, lose out on a job?
Here's what I'd like to do. Ross Cochran. I want Ross Cochran to take a picture of all of our faces.
Oh, good one, yeah.
Just a resting picture of our faces and post
them. When we're not looking.
Well, it doesn't have to be casual because, for instance, in my case, I'm yapping all morning.
You can't prepare for this, though, because, like, Victoria Beckham prepares for RBF. She makes herself.
I think the pictures you see of Victoria Beckham are the happiest she is all day.
She's married to David Beckham.
I know. She should be smiling all the time.
But if you grant that some people are going to look more unhappy than others and some people are going to look happier than others, you had to take that bias out and just get a picture of someone's resting face.
Can I ask?
And here's a question.
Yeah.
We post these pictures. I want people to take a look at these pictures and determine who is the bitchiest member of the Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, nice.
Okay, and see if there's a bias.
We're going to vote?
Because they're on study, and if this study goes as well as I think, Northwestern is ready to give me a grant of over $12 million to continue my scientific exploits.
That would be very cool. Do men like that? I'm just curious. Do you guys like the RBF on the women?
No, it frightens us.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, this is one contest I can win.
You can search this morning, Resting Bitch Face, Washington Post. Google those and you'll find the story. We'll post it as well. It's 7:18. We'll post those pictures of our resting faces and to see who you think is the biggest bitch on the staff. Coming up. But first, here's Mary.
Wait a minute. When you put it that way,
it's all science. Listen.
No, RBF. RBF.
$12 million grant.
Big RBF test. RBF test. Here's Mary. /7:24. We got a bunch of texts we'll get to in just a second on RBF syndrome. A new medical concern. Comptroller Leslie Munger will join us in just a second. Ross is going around to the staff right now taking pictures of our faces, which he will post, and then you'll determine who is the biggest bitch on the show. Resting bitch face, RBF syndrome.
It's hard, though. You were taking, you know, Ross was taking all of our pictures, and you're making all of us laugh. So it's hard to be bitchy.
That's not fair. No one made me laugh. He just told me I'm going to win straight on.
You know, it's funny, Mary, because from the 773, let me just read a text to you. 773, Mary wins RBF hands down. You don't need to take pictures. Sorry, Mary, it's true.
How does he see me?
847.
Is that my husband?
847, sight unseen, Cochran, you're the bitchiest. 312, RBF, I vote for Steve. 630, how can you tell if it's RBF or the woman is just constipated? 224, the male version of RBF is Cutler face.
Oh, that's true.
Excellent.
Yeah.
The texter continues, I know because I suffer from it and causes all my friends to hate me every time they see my face.
I actually had a friend one time and guys would come up to her and say, smile, smile. But that was just how she looked.
Yeah, and isn't that one of those things that women hate when somebody comes up and goes, come on, smile. What's the matter with you? Why aren't you smiling? I mean, you walk around all day judging yourselves. You don't want others to judge you because they think you're not happy, right?
Let me just say that's not a great pickup line. Smile. You don't look happy.
Yeah.
Go away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's over already before it started. So, Ross, you're going to post those pictures where? Here comes Ross to the microphone now to tell you where those pictures will be posted.
Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, on Twitter at Cochran Show. And if you think that what we'll do is we'll have this where you can vote on us, and then we'll try to see if anyone can beat whoever will win on this show, cough, cough, Mary.
Man.
I don't want to say
so it. People can send pictures themselves.
I'm just saying, I think it'd be funny if people tweet at Cochran Show or post on our Steve Cochran Show Facebook page pictures of their own resting bitch face to see if they can beat whoever's going to win. It's going to be Mary.
All right. So, again, this is from the Washington Post. This has turned into a medical study. Think Kristen Stewart. Think Victoria Beckham. These are the faces we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You can be beautiful and suffer from RBF.
What are the prizes? Maybe Mary will get a big prize.
Yeah, come on.
It probably would be like, you know, maybe the audio from our car trip back yesterday.
For like I do want that.
5.5 hours in the car.
I definitely want that.
Because I remember all of it. Because I was part of all those conversations.
Yeah, you weren't sleeping. Not at all. Andrea woke up petrified that she'd been snoring.
Are we there yet, Steve? Are we there yet?
And as far as you know, you weren't.
Thank God. I don't snore.
At 7:27, there's a disturbing story in the news today about an arrest that I wished I'd been able to bring up to Karen Conti. Bizao doo doo zo pity bop 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 was arrested for assault. We'll have the details coming up. It's 7:28 on 7:20 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show, 7:20 WGN.
Let's go back to the text for a second. 312-981-7200. How come Dave's sportscast takes so long? That's from the 630, from the 773. Can't Dave get to the point with sports? It's taking someone from the 847. Dave, blah, 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 blah. Why does it always have to be about you? Those are texts.
You want to see my face now? Want to see it?
That's actually ABF syndrome. That's active bitch face. That's not resting bitch face.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. 741. Leslie Munger is standing by. Well, just when you think it can't get any worse, it turns out the woman who has the toughest job in the state of Illinois has more delightful news. Leslie Munger, can't you ever call with good news?
I wish I could. Good morning, Steve. How are you this morning?
Doing all right. Nice to have you on again. And I tell you this every time you're on, but I don't know how you're doing it. I don't know how your people are doing it because you're the ones that have to keep track of the money. And as you are now here to tell us, this impasse is worse than we thought.
Well, it's really, you know, it's gone on so long. I don't think anyone thought that it would go on, you know, into 8 months without a budget. And I think people see a lot of things in the state being paid, and so they don't realize how bad things really are. But we are just building up a backlog of bills because we are digging ourselves such a great debt.
So when you don't pay your bills in the real world, there are there's penalties. There's penalties you have to pay. There are consequences. What are the consequences to the state for not paying their bills?
Well, we pay when a voucher comes into the state and it's been here more than 90 days, we start paying 1% interest. So that's 12% annually. This past the first 6 months of our fiscal year, we have racked up what we are going to owe in fees close to $200 million. I think the number is about $190 million just through the first 6 months of the year. And I think, you know, it's important for people to realize that a budget provides a limit. It provides a cap to spending. I think of it like a credit card where you have a limit on what you can spend. And without a budget, and with courts ordering to make payments without a budget, we are just blowing through all the limits. We're adding to that debt, and then we pay fees and late fees on all that debt.
So again, this is money. And keep in mind all the state agencies and especially the smaller vendors that are going out of business because they are not getting payment from the state and the people's lives that are affected by those, not to mention the teachers that will be affected soon. What Leslie Munger is talking about, State Comptroller Leslie Munger is talking about here, are late fees. This is not money we have to pay. This is money we're paying because we didn't pay or we didn't pay on time. $400 million, that's what we're trending towards, right?
Right. This is a result of just terrible financial management.
It's outrageous.
For decades. I mean, I just like to remind everyone that we're here because for decades we have made bad decisions. And we are now in a situation where the consequences of those decisions are all coming home, you know, to hit us in the budget. We have huge pension liabilities. So things like pension reform, very, very important. I'm so glad to see that the Senate President Cullerton and the governor are really look like they may have some agreement on that. We need to be looking for savings everywhere in our state right now.
Leslie, really, how long can this go on? I mean, we're borrowing. I guess my mom always says, robbing from Peter to pay Paul. We're paying interest now, much like you would do on a credit card, because we're carrying things over. There was a threat last month where they said they're going to shut the power down at the state capitol. When is D-Day? When is it really going to be really noticeable?
Well, there's two things. So we are paying about 90% of the state's bills, and the power issue you just spoke of is a result of that falls into the 10% of the state we cannot fund. Bigger concern there is universities, all of our higher education, a lot of social service agencies. We are seeing closing doors and canceling services because of this 10% that we can't pay anything legally on. But we never really run out of money in the state. Every single day we bring in more tax revenue. We bring in fees. Local sales tax revenue comes into the state. So we have an ongoing revenue stream, but we run out of money every single day as we try to pay billions of bills with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. It just doesn't add up.
And it goes to the union fight. It goes to all of it. Just think about your life. If you really want the $45,000 car, but you can only afford the $25,000 car, then you're going to buy, well, this weekend, the Super Bowl. You really want the new $2,000 TV, but you can only afford the $500 TV. Somebody's got to be a grown-up. And these aren't Democrats and Republican problems. These are everybody's problems. Because as you said, Comptroller, everybody has screwed this up. And now we got to fix it.
Right. It would be so wonderful if, instead of pointing fingers and blaming each other, because believe me, there's plenty of blame to go around for many, many years. We just got in a room and everybody sat down and put the people in the state first and solved it. And there are solutions. I'm an optimist, but I know what kinds of things it's going to take to get out of this. We are going to have to go through and make our government more efficient and cut expense out of things like, in my own office, I cut my budget 10% and I did nothing drastic doing it. So
right.
I believe we could do that everywhere throughout the state. We are going to need some new revenue, but we cannot raise revenue enough to solve this problem on taxes alone. We would have to take our tax rate up to somewhere between 7 and 8%. First of all, that's the math. That's how much it would take, the revenue it would take to get to the debt to pay the backlog we have. But no one would vote for that. And we've been down this road before. We don't spend it on what we need to spend it on. What we really need is we need the component of growth added to revenue so that we can get our businesses growing. We can get additional sources of revenue coming from a growing economy. And we need some of the reforms the governor's asked for that will reduce costs, you know, maybe fewer regulations of things to our businesses so they can absorb a revenue tax increase. And still put people back to work and flourish. And really, that's a solution. It's a three-legged stool. We need all three legs.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't care who you're mad at in this. Just let somebody know you're mad at them. Let the governor's office know. Let the four tops know. You know, let Redonio and Cutlerton and Madigan and Durkin know. Let them all know. Let your rep know. You don't know who your rep is? Google it. Put your zip code in and say, who's my Illinois rep? It'll come up. Send them emails. Flood Springfield with the fear that you should have about this because, again, it's coming to your front door.
That's such a bright light, too, though, Leslie, that you said you all got together in a room and said, okay, let's just start right here. And you cut your own budget by 10%.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's all doable. And, I think it's people say, well, can't we just go bankrupt? No, the state can't go bankrupt. And we don't print money like the federal government does. We have to pay for this. And so it's time for us all to be adults, sit down and say, you know, we're in this position. Now, how do we get out of it? Let's all get together and figure it out.
By the way, bankruptcy is not a solution. Bankruptcy is protection by failure. You have to admit that you're a massive financial failure, and there's consequences to that as well.
Yeah, there certainly are. It's we can get it done. We need people working together.
It's testing your positive attitude, isn't it?
You know what? I feel I'm happy to be able to be in a position where I can help people, help organizations around the state. And we do continue to pull up payments and expedite payments to those who are most vulnerable in our state. It's hurting a lot of people going through this period without a budget. And, you know, I think the more people realize it's not a solution to manage our states but through court orders, that we need a budget in place so we can live within our means, it will actually help us in the long run be in a position to provide good funding for education, for social services, public safety, infrastructure, all the things that are important for our state to fund. But right now, we can't pay for it, and people wait months, and it's not a way to run a state.
Comptroller Leslie Munger, I appreciate your honesty. You're always honest, factual, forthright, and all of those other things. And I can think of other F words I might use in regards to this. But you're a great guest for that reason, and I certainly hope people are listening. So thank you for being on.
Thank you very much for having me on this morning. Have a great day.
I'm going to make her run for governor. At Leslie Munger, ILLESLIEMUNGERIL is where you find her on social media. And by the way, when this budget gets done, and it will at some point, if the governor or anybody in the Four Tops decides to have a press conference and pat each other on the back for doing it, they all should be arrested immediately. A budget is not an accomplishment. A budget is the bare minimum of their responsibilities.
Yeah, and the fact that it's gone on this long.
It's like having a 16-year-old come down to breakfast and go, tied my own shoes. Yep, did it. Tied my own shoes, Dad. Ridiculous.
Clear your mind behind the pendulum. Tell us what you see.
I heard a knock at the door. There was an old lady. She had this weird smile on her face. She took me downstairs. They were wearing robes. It was a black mass. I'll kill you, too.
Clip from the new movie, Regression. Oh, man. I'm telling you, somebody's going to have to go with me. Ethan Hawke joins us. Ethan Hawke, now watch for this introduction. Ethan Hawke, well-respected by his peers, but I think maybe underrated by the public, is one of the great American actors. I think he's terrific.
I thought you were going to say one of the hottest.
And I'm not just kissing your butt. I really believe that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, man. I had one of the best acting experiences of my life there in Chicago. A few years ago, I did a play at Steppenwolf and had you got a whole city full of great actors.
It really is true. Chicago's underrated, too, as a fountain of great acting talent. So tell me about Regression, starting with your co-star, who everybody's going to know.
Yeah, Emma Watson is, it's a strange thing. It's very rare somebody that we've all kind of watched grow up. And I mean, know that there's not many movies that have been more seen than the Harry Potter series. I mean, I have to watch through the whole thing with each kid. You know, each kid I have wants to watch the whole thing. I think I've seen all those movies like four times.
Sure.
I don't think I was ever more popular in my household than when I was working with Hermione.
Right. You're going, Dad, you finally made a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, normally they give me such a hard time about going to work. But if I was going to work with Emma, well, then that was important. You don't need to walk me to school. You need to go be with Emma.
Take your time, Dad. No guilt trip today. Ethan Hawke, Regression. It opens this Friday with Emma Watson as well. Tell people about the movie.
It's a movie directed by this guy, Alejandro Amenábar, who is a Spanish director who did a film a few years ago called The Others with Nicole Kidman.
Yep.
And he's just kind of an interesting filmmaker, and I really did the movie for the chance to work with him. And I don't know, the movie tries to follow, allegedly inspired by true events. I don't know to what extent I really buy that, but that's what the poster says.
Right, got it.
No, there are cases of, it's a young woman is abused by her family, and I play the cop who's investigating it as I investigated a larger crime unfolds.
And as this movie plays out, I will be closer and closer to going from faking I'm not scared to actually thinking I need to leave the theater.
I know. This guy's really interesting. I don't know if you saw the others, but it's less of a roller coaster ride and more of just kind of spooky, weird movie.
The suspense part that I grew up on with Hitchcock, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I think I was 2 or 3 when Psycho came out. But I remember being 8, 9, 10 years old when Psycho came out. You go back and look at Psycho. There's no gore in Psycho, but it scared the hell out of you. I haven't taken a shower since I watched Psycho. That's how scary Psycho is.
No, Psycho is absolutely... All those Hitchcock movies still remain the bar. You know, between, you know, Kubrick and Hitchcock laid it down about how to do tension in film.
But it sounds like what he's achieved here, and this is a dude that I don't know, your director, Amenabar, I don't know that I want to be in an elevator stuck with him, because I think he's got a dark side to him, and I'd have to watch him.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you want that, you know. You don't want to be surrounded by birds. You don't want to walk up on any tall towers. You don't want to cross any black cats.
But having said that, I want to see this movie because I want to see what you do with the cop. I want to see Emma Watson play this kind of a role. And I want to see how crazy Amenabar can make me. So it's regression. It's Friday. Before we run out of time with you, we're taking celebrity Super Bowl picks. Who you got Sunday?
All right. Well, listen to me. I got my man Peyton Manning, and I got the Denver Broncos defense. I know everybody thinks I'm nuts, but I have a theory that the old dog's not going to go down. I think he's going to come out and, you know, well, that's what I want. What do I really think is going to happen? I don't know. But what I want to happen, I'm a Giants fan, and as you follow Eli Manning and you watch how these Manning brothers carry themselves, they both are such class acts. And over the years, you know, when Peyton first started, I really didn't like him. He won too much. And I never like anybody that wins that much.
Mm-hmm.
But as the years have gone by and you watch how he handles himself and carries himself through all this adversity, I've really grown to have a tremendous amount of respect for him. And I'd really like the story to end well, you know. And then that said, I just think Cam Newton's the most exciting thing in football right now. So it's kind of win-win for me.
Well, it is for us, too. You know, Ron Rivera being an old Chicago Bear, it's hard not to pull for Rivera. And Carolina's been great for you know, all season long. They've just been unbelievable and underrated again. But having said that, I believe Cam Newton's going to get 1, 2, maybe 3. And I truly believe this is Peyton Manning's last rodeo. I'm with you. I want Peyton Manning to get one more. I want it to be a good Thanksgiving where Eli doesn't get to go. I got 2, you got 1. They both get 2.
You know, I hate listening to the sports announcers beat up on old legends. You know,
yep.
I hate it. And they've all been like, you know, as if none of us ever have a bad day, you know.
Right.
As if any of us never struggle. You know, they all love to promote the new guy and everything. I think Cam Newton's got a whole generation of changing the quarterback position and being a stud and a hero. And this is the end of Peyton's era. And truth be told, that Denver defense is sick. And Tom Brady is a great quarterback, and he couldn't get a damn throw off.
No, they're tremendous.
So all the old dudes always say defenses win Super Bowls. So let's see.
Yeah, and by the way, Alejandro Amenabar's next movie is about that Denver defense where it just chases people around in an old house. Ethan Hawke, man, good luck with regression. Thanks for coming on.
All right, thanks for having me, man.
All right, all the best. Oh, well, we love Ethan. He's great.
Seems like such a cool, chill,
laid-back guy.
Funny guy. And then you see him in like Dead Poets Society and Boyhood, and he's just so serious.
He commits.
He does commit.
All right, it's 8:28. And the show business situation is sponsored by Captain James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare Center. We're having a good time with Ethan Hawke, so we kind of ran out of time here, but let's get some headlines in at least. What's going on with this Modern Family cast member?
Well, the kids in Modern Family are all grown up now. Ariel Winter, who plays Julie Bowen's daughter.
She's only like 18 or something, right?
She's great, and they're great young actors as well. She went through a lot of legal hoopla trying to get emancipation from her parents a couple of years ago, from
messy
her mom.
Messy family situation.
Very messy. She doesn't talk to her family except her sister now, but she had a breast reduction surgery. She said she suffered from horrible back pain and terrible problems because of it. So she had...
Well, you remember, and this has got to be very awkward, right? Because we saw her as a little girl.
Yeah.
When this thing started. And then when she developed, it was, wow. So it was an awkward situation to go through, and you're going through it in front of a million people.
In front of a million people, you know, social media. Now, she was getting horrendous comments on Twitter, so she said, you know what, I'm going to have this breast reduction surgery. Well, she's had it. It was successful. She feels great. And she wore it. She's been obviously making the red carpet appearances at the Golden Globe and the SAG Awards, and at the SAG Awards, she wore a low-cut dress, and you could see some of the scars from where the surgery was, right? Big deal.
Why is that a problem?
Big deal. This is unbelievable how the Twitterverse and how cruel people are being to her.
You mean giving her a hard time because she wore that dress?
Yeah, giving her a hard time saying, you know, hide the scars, don't do this like this is, you know, 1930 or something.
And like it's anybody's business.
Absolutely, yeah. So she's coming out today and over the weekend saying that, you know what, too bad, so sad. It's a health decision that she made.
Right.
It's a personal choice, and get off her back. So
it's probably a bunch of guys giving her heck. You know,
I doubt it.
Just
you know what?
Back pain.
I'm telling you, I'll bet it's women. I'll bet there's a lot of women who are questioning, why would you wear a dress like that? Why would you do that?
She says she's not going to make an effort to cover up the scars, and she's going to continue to wear the dresses that she wants to wear, as she should.
Good for her.
Yeah, I like her attitude.
And one more. This is kind of for Nick DiGilio, because I know he is in heaven now that the Gilmore Girls are going to do a revival. Melissa McCarthy, though, is not going to be in the show.
And why is that?
She says nobody asked her. If they had asked her to do it, they're going to do a four-part Gilmore Girls revival, easy for me to say. And then Kelly Bishop, Scott Patterson are among the original cast members who are going to reprise their roles. But Sookie St. James, nope. Nobody asked her to do it, and she said that's okay. She would have done it, but nobody asked her to do it. Yeah, of all people, you'd think Melissa McCarthy would be in that.
That is so weird. Maybe they thought like she wouldn't do it because it was such a small part when she did it.
And because she's such a big star now.
Yeah.
But no one asked her. It's kind of weird.
Why wouldn't you bring it up?
I don't know.
It's bizarre. Time for Breakfast with a Blackhawk. Breakfast with a Blackhawk, a regular feature of the Steve Cochran Experience. You know what it is? It's a Steve Cochran situation, and it's sponsored by MB Financial Bank. Because the guys are on the West Coast, and because of the time difference, I thought, well, you know, here's an opportunity. I certainly don't want to be a part of getting the guys up too early and maybe causing them to not have enough rest.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
They just got enough rest. So we haven't talked to any of the ambassadors in a while. So we're talking on the trip. I said, well, what about Tony O? What about Espo?
Don't you love Tony O?
We haven't had Tony Esposito on in a while.
He's awesome.
What about the greatest goalie of all time? How about that? Perfect timing. You can tell us how good Corey Crawford is, right? Let's go to Tony Esposito right now. Good morning, legend. How are you?
Oh, Steve. Nice to hear from you.
Nice to talk to you again. And I want to talk about your favorite place to be right in front of the net. How good was Corey Crawford last night?
Well, Corey is, I think he's come a long way. He's developed. He's worked hard at it. He's become a top goalie in the league. You know, he gets dumped on a little bit too much. I think that, you know, because we have such a good team, I mean, but he's come up big and won games for us. And, you know, anytime you can keep the team to the opposition to one goal, your team has a great chance to win. And he gives our team a chance to win every game.
It's a weird night last night because I think the Avs had maybe 10 shots through the first two periods.
They actually had 8 shots. They were outshot 29-8, but some of those shots were on power plays too.
So, and then in the third period, 16 shots and seven in like 37 seconds. I would think from a goalie perspective, it's harder to wait for the action, right? Don't you want to kind of be in it the whole game?
Oh, absolutely. It's tough when you're just sitting there and your team is dominated and you're not scoring goals. And as a result, you know, you get a little more nervous. And you know that you can't give up a goal because it's going to cost your team a point. And, you know, he just played really well for us. And I thought our team played overall. We played a pretty good hockey game.
Really remarkable when you think those first two goals came early, but then Crawford stopped that onslaught again. We're always amazed, Tony Esposito. We're always amazed when you see a great goalie like you, but we see Corey Crawford stop 7 shots in 30 seconds, where it just happens to be like a machine gun sort of thing. But I suppose it's all reactions, right? I mean, you could stop one, you could stop seven. If you're on your game, you're going to stop. And maybe that's not the most athletic thing you did all night. Maybe the most athletic thing you did all night was staying awake for the first two periods so you could survive the third.
You're right there. And to keep your focus, you know, to keep yourself in the game when you don't have any action, it's very difficult to do. And I think that the good goalies are able to do this, whereas the other guys, they drift off and, you know, they get some cheap goals on them. But overall, I think that our team defensively is a real strong team this year. And, you know, I think we're an improved player from an improved team from last year. I think we're a better team as a team. I mean, well balanced lines. And, you know, we're pretty good hockey team. We got two solid goalies. So we're in pretty good shape.
And, Tony, what do you think of the Panarin kid?
He's phenomenal. He just fits in with Kane. They just seem to know what each other player is doing when they got the puck. They get in the open and they make things happen. That line to me has been the best line in the NHL. And, you know, those three guys have really played well together.
Tony, you were a perennial All-Star, and I wonder if you watched the All-Star game over the weekend, or the All-Star tournament, I guess, as it were, and what you thought of it.
Well, I sort of liked it. I thought that it was entertaining and fun. You know, the other way, when you're scoring, you know, the score is like 15 to 12, I mean, and nobody's trying, that's not fun to watch at all. The way they had the format, that the guys worked hard and they give them a nice prize at the end of the tunnel. You know what I mean? It was nice to win that. You win a nice piece of change. And I liked it. And then I liked the outcome.
What?
Really liked when Scott got everything.
Ah, it was so great.
Once in a lifetime. That was beautiful.
That was so great. When you played in the All-Star games, what did the players get?
Well, we didn't get a really, you know, you won a little bit for winning. I don't know, maybe a couple thousand dollars. I don't know. But the point was, it was a different concept. You know, we had less teams. You saw each other a lot of times. And you sort of developed a hate for the other guys. So we played hard. We wanted to win, and it was very physical. And, you know, we've got a few players were hurt over the years, but it was just like a regular game in those days. But I like this new concept. I think it's more entertaining for the people, and it's more of a show than a real game.
I think you played in, tell me if I'm right about this, was it six All-Star games?
Well, I don't know, really. No, you know more than me, six or seven.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
And like five in a row in the early 70s. You were talking about those 13-12 games, and I've never talked to a goalie about this. I would think that would be incredibly annoying because you get guys coming in and you got two or three guys getting hat tricks. Well, the goalie's going home. Even if you got three goalies in the game, you may have given up four or five in a period. That, I mean, some ways the old format wasn't good for a goalie, was it?
No, because he was the only guy on the ice that tried.
Right.
Everybody else was just going through the motion. And the goalie had to try as best he can. And, you know, he was getting embarrassed, you know, 13 goals, you know, between the two of them or whatever, three of them. And they couldn't wait to get off the ice, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, so this new format is a good thing. Every goalie's got a spot that is the lockdown spot. You're never going to score a goal on me there. And this, I think you and I talked about this. Every goalie's also got a spot that's a challenge. What was the area for you that you really had to work on? You know, was it glove side? Was it pad side? Where were you vulnerable?
Well, probably as most guys, up top.
Uh huh.
Up top, you know, high in the net, high corners. Both corners were tough to stop, and we had in the 70s mainly. I know it changed later because I was happy when it changed. The curved stick, you know, became
Yeah.
Much less curved. It went down to a half an inch, but when it was 2 and 3 inches, those players used to get that puck up in a hurry, man.
Right, right. You can make it fly.
Going in the top corners.
Talking to Tony Esposito, it's the MB Financial Bank Breakfast with a Blackhawk question from a listener here, and Chris Scheibel from Pawpaw, Michigan will get an autographed Blackhawks puck for this. Question is, what's your most memorable on-ice moment from your incredible career? What's the one thing that first flashes to mind when you think back?
Well, the one thing that I would remember most is I would say my first game with the Blackhawks playing my old team, Montreal Canadiens. We beat them 4-0 early into the season, and that started our Blackhawks run, or then we started to go better. I was just a young kid, and we got a couple of breaks, kind of beat them 4-0, and that started. And then we went on a nice roll, and for several years we had a really good outcome until that World Hockey League interfered.
Right. Yeah, kind of tipped the balance. And, yeah, how about that?
Well, we lost key players.
Well, no doubt about it, including the Golden Jet. Yeah. Yeah, you lose the Jet at the peak of his powers. One more from Dave, and then we'll let you fly.
We're talking a little bit about goaltending, Tony, and the spots that gave you trouble. When you look around the league now, you see these bigger goaltenders. Ben Bishop is the one thought that comes to mind very quickly in terms of size. Do you think that's going to be a prerequisite going forward for guys to play that position, to be big and tall?
Well, I think that the whole, you know, you look at the population, we're all getting bigger. Every 10 years there's another couple inches, you know.
Yeah.
Our guys are bigger now, and I think that with the great equipment they have today, the lightness of the great equipment and the size, I think it's a no-brainer. I would go with the bigger goalie if he's agile, and rather than the smaller guy. You know, if you had a comparison and they were both pretty even, I would take the bigger guy, absolutely. Of course, I would take the bigger hockey player over the smaller hockey player, no matter what position.
It's going to be very hard going forward for a Darren Pang type to ever play at the height of the game again.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, Muggsy Bogues in net. We're probably going to see that. Webster.
Little guy.
Goalie Webster. I don't think Gary Coleman in net. I don't think so. Tonio, you're the best, man. Great catching up with you. Hold the line for us. It's Tony Esposito, legendary Chicago Blackhawks, legendary NHL goalie. One of the best ever, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And by the way, that All-Star game, the TV ratings in Canada were up 33% from last year.
That's a pretty good sign.
A lot of people are saying it's because of the John Scott thing.
Yeah.
And on NBC Sportsnet in the States, the ratings were up 24% from a year ago.
That's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I think they'll keep it.
All right, let's do a quick wheel of plugs here. Ross, people still voting on who has the best resting bitch face?
Very, very much so. On Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, just a few of the comments from Mark. You guys should send these pics to Genucell. From Melissa, tough one, Andre or Dave. Jackie, Mary, Dave a close second. Sorry, Mary, but you win. Cheryl, woo-hoo. Sorry, Mary, but you win. Ken, hands down, Mary. Larry, Mary. Nicole, Mary. Devin, Mary. Karen, Mary. Lisa, Mary. Maureen, Mary. Lindsay, Mary. But she has the most delightful voice.
Mary Vandeville.
Gee, thanks. I'm so proud.
Mary Vandeville, the leader in the clubhouse for resting bitch face. Plug number two. And keep those coming, by the way, to Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show or @CochranShow on Twitter. Yes?
Yes, plenty of Twitter love as well.
But. And send your pictures, too. Send your pictures in. We want to see listeners' resting bitch faces as well. If you have no idea what a resting bitch face is, Google that and Google Washington Post. You'll see the story that started all of this.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
9-11 in the morning, sacked. The roast of Richard Dent is coming. Dave, you coming to that?
I am not sure.
I'm inviting you right now.
Okay, then yes.
I will be hosting the event.
Are you going to roast Richard?
Nope. Going to roast everybody else, so. everybody else. I'm mostly going to roast people with bad knees because I figure I got a chance to run just as fast as they do.
There'll be a few of them there. By the way, Richard Dent is very good in the Bears 30 for 30 documentary.
Did you finish it?
I'm like 10 minutes from finishing, but it's a great show. It really is.
Yeah, I agree with you. Completely agree with you. Sack, the Roast of Richard Dent comes up Saturday night, February 20th, 8 o'clock. A celebrity roast of Richard Dent honoring and benefiting BBF Family Services. And joining me on the phone right now is the Chief Executive Officer of BBF Family Services. It's Rufus Williams. Good morning, Rufus.
Good morning. How are you, Steve?
Nice to talk to you again.
You too. Now, I'm wondering how, I haven't seen the 40 for 40 episode, but how long is it that you're still trying to get through it?
Well, Dave keeps putting bookmarks in it. And by the way, it's 30 for 30. If it was 40 for 40, it'd take him two more weeks. Yeah.
I think it's about an hour 40, and I keep watching and getting interrupted. And tonight I'm going to finish it. It's on tomorrow night on ESPN, I think.
Yeah, and it is tremendous. How did you connect with BBF Family Services? Because you're a busy guy. You've got plenty to do in your life.
Well, this is now my life. Actually, my story is a quick and good one. But I grew up in North Lawndale, which is where BBF is located. It was the Better Boys Foundation back then, and it started in 1960. As years went on, and I did well going through life, but I got to College Point, and I didn't have money to go to college. And I was introduced then to the Better Boys Foundation, was able through Better Boys Foundation to get a college scholarship. A few years after that, I joined the board. I became treasurer. I became president of the board and went on to do other things in life after that. And coming up to last year, or early last year, BBF was looking for a new executive director, and someone suggested me, and so the prodigal son has returned home to try to really do some things and help some people where we are and throughout the city.
And if you know Rufus's name, it's probably because you were involved or came across one of the other many projects you've done to try to make life better for people in the city. I think you and I first met when you were doing Real Men Read.
Yeah, Real Men Read. I was actually spent four years as president of the Chicago Board of Education. And in that space, we started this program called Real Men Read, where we had, when I left, we had almost 1,000 men going into schools on Thursday mornings once a month to read books to children. A phenomenal opportunity for children to really see some good role models, to understand what real men do, and to engage men in ways with them that they hadn't otherwise seen and still need to see, which is a lot of what we're trying to do at BBF Family Services.
One of the saddest things about what's happened in Lawndale is what's not happened in Lawndale. And from the time you grew up and from the time you left to now, economic development and an encouragement for not just young men, but young men and women from the neighborhood to maximize their lives and return to the neighborhood just hasn't been there, has it?
Steve, Ryerson Steel, Sears Roebuck, Magic Kiss, Western Electric, all these companies were there right in Lawndale, and it was the building of a middle class because people were able to get jobs. People lived there. My dad worked out at Sun Chemical out by Midway Airport, but people lived there and were able to really move their lot in life. What I notice when I go back to Lawndale now, I can go down 16th Street or go down Roosevelt Road, and I can see where the gas station was, where the grocery store was, where the discount store was, where the record store was, and all I see are vacant lots. And those vacant lots have been there since 1968, since after the civil unrest when Dr. King was killed. Sears has left. All the companies that I mentioned, they're all gone. There's very little industry there. CenterSpace is now the big company that's in Lawndale, and we're having great conversations with them. They're also supporting us in this effort to roast Richard. But very little has been reinvested in that community. So what you end up with is a place that struggles with generational, abject poverty, joblessness, disinvestment. 71% of the schools in North Lawndale have had some kind of action, meaning they've been closed, they're charter schools, they're run by a private operator, which means the educational outcomes haven't been good for some time. So it's really an area that struggles as a result of the worst things that happened. And also, you know, the whole Laquan McDonald situation took place right there on the west side, a couple miles south of BBF. He lived not far from us. And when we look at what happened to Laquan and all the things around it, what happens when you're over-policed and all the levels of government – of local government then cover it up? What does that mean over years? Because clearly that was not the first time that it happened. And all the things that are there just leads to a level of hopelessness that should never exist, not in a civilized society, not in America.
Amen to that. And the way you can help, at least in part, is by getting a start in this great evening of entertainment. Richard Dent has agreed to be roasted. Now, I see this ending poorly for me. Because I've known Richard for a long time, but I see Richard taking out all of his anger on me on the dais. That might actually raise more money.
Well, and people should come. So I heard you ask someone there if they were coming, and they said maybe. No, this is a must-go.
Yeah, this is Dave.
See this.
Dave's in.
Yeah,
well, we want Richard Dave Bennett there. We want the sports director for WGN there. You know we do.
I can't imagine that he said maybe. I just can't understand that.
Well, it was just I don't know what got into me. I'll be there.
That's what I thought you said. I thought it was that demonstrative.
Now, I know there's a lot of guys who are going to do videos because they can't get back to town and things, but you want to mention anybody who's confirmed to be there?
Well, I do. Mike Wilbon from ESPN is going to be there with us. A number of Richard's teammates, Steve McMichael, Otis Wilson, Dan Hampton, Willie Gault. The Chicago Six is going to actually perform there. Teresa Griffin, who is a wonderful songstress, who was one of the finalists on The Voice, is going to entertain us. But, yeah, we're going to have some great tributes from guys who can't be there, who are close to Richard, people whose names you may recognize, like Michael Jordan or Julius Erving, Jackie Joyner Kersee, Eric Dickerson. We've got, and we're still lining them up. So we've got a lot of great things that are happening, and we're having this other part of the evening, our afterburn after party, where they'll be, finishing up the evening, dancing. We'll have a live auction. We'll have a silent auction. We'll have a lot of things going on to really raise money and try to help families. Help us along in doing the work we're doing in Lawndale.
Follow on social at BBF Family Services, and the money raised that night that goes to BBF will do what specifically?
Well, we've got a number of programs that, one, we help in health and welfare. We help with children. We have a child kid lab for children from the ages of 3 to 13. We have a youth lab for children from the ages of 14 to 19. We do family services. We have health and welfare programs, fresh foods for families. We do have a strong education program where we're helping children get into college, trying to help them stay into high school, helping their parents really advocate for them in their schools. BBF is doing a full wraparound of services so that we can try to make sure that families in an area like North Lawndale have the same opportunities as families who live in Lincoln Park or Lake Forest. So the money that we raise there helps us to do all that, and also helps us to really innovate some additional programs that don't come with all the bells and whistles that you have to when you're getting funding from grants, or certainly would have us struggle like those who rely heavily on the state are struggling right now.
Yeah, and shutting down left and right. We're trying to revitalize, not close things down. But
these are the people who need it the most, so we certainly have to give back to those who need it the most whenever we can, and this is just an opportunity to do that.
Amen to that, Reverend. The roast of Richard Dent on February 20th. It's at Revel Fulton Market, and you can help BBF Family Services and have a great night in the process. Again, for tickets, the best place to go is where?
The best place to go is BBFFamilyServices.org. Right there on our website, you can get tickets right there. If that troubles you, if it's easier, give us a call, 773-542-7300. Ask for me, Rufus Williams. Ask for Dominique Stewart. Ask for Bessie Alcantara. Ask for anybody. We'll sell you tickets. We'll get you involved. We'll get you engaged. We'll get you in.
You can also go to the events page at WGNradio.com. All the information's there.
We are giving away a pair of tickets, by the way. Both of you are giving away a pair of tickets to this. All you got to do is tweet using the hashtag BBFSaxDent for a chance to win. That contest runs through February 17th. Again, go to WGNradio.com, and you'll see the links. You just follow the links for that as well. The hashtag is BBFSaxDent. However, I always get uncomfortable when we give away tickets to charity events. So here's what I'm saying, as I say every time. We'll give you a pair of tickets, but you got to buy another pair. So if you win a pair, and this is the honor system, I'm asking you to commit to buying another pair that you can give to somebody else, because we want a full house, we expect a full house, and we know we'll have it, Rufus.
We will, and it's going to be great. And, you know, Richard's going to be there. This is going to be one putting his name up in lights and watching him sweat and grovel and spending him the hardest time that they possibly can. You know, I've got a picture of me, Richard Dent, and Big Cat Williams. So since Big Cat and I share the last name, I often ask people, if anybody has an issue with me, Big Cat's right here with me. So Big Cat, we're expecting that he's going to be there. He's working through his schedule. So come on out. You'll be protected by Big Cat against Richard and all else that goes on. It's just a phenomenal evening.
Here's the thing. Rufus is a terrific athlete in his own right, but Rufus is a normal-sized human being. That picture of you between Big Cat and Richard Dent, you must have looked like Kevin Hart.
I have to show it to you. I look smaller than Kevin Hart. Those cats are just massive. Those are massive men.
Two buildings.
So I took it because of the novelty of it. But it's going to be a great evening and great for anybody who can be there. It's one you don't want to miss.
Amen to that.
Given all that's going on now, you know, Richard. Richard gave a great Hall of Fame speech. Richard's been a great guy. We've had wonderful involvement with the NFL Players Association, and particularly the Chicago Bears, over a number of years. So Richard coming back to help us in this way is really great, and all the guys joining in to help us has been just phenomenal.
Very generous, no doubt about it. Thank you, Rufus Williams. Hold the line, and we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the date as well. We'll take a break, come back, 9:23. We'll get an update on how the RBF face syndrome social media effort is going this morning.
Yeah.
And to see if Mary is still the leader in the clubhouse to have this horrible condition. After this on 720 WGN. Ross Cochran's here. Ross, how are you?
I'm happy to be here.
Ross, you've been put in charge of a very important story this morning.
It has.
Headline from the Washington Post: scientists have discovered what causes resting bitch face.
Yep.
This is a condition that affects actresses like Kristen Stewart and Victoria Beckham, but even the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, has this as well. And it is an expression on a woman's face that could cost her in relationships or in jobs because she looks bitchy.
Yep.
When men do it, they look authoritative. When women do it, they look bitchy. It's not fair. It's just factual. So a study that was put to good use, this is good academic grant money being put to use, used something called the Noldus Face Reader to see if men have the same negative impact from their resting bitch faces. And I think we know what the answer is going to be. It's harder to be a girl.
It is.
It's harder to be female.
See?
So we put the staff to the test to see what our staff resting bitch status would be.
Yes.
Put it up on Facebook. Ross took pictures of everybody. Put a gallery up on Facebook and separate tweets you can vote on Twitter, at Cochran Show. What are the results you're hearing?
At least everyone has received one first place vote,
except
for Kevin.
Kevin has no resting bitch face votes.
Kevin has no resting bitch face votes.
If we did a vote like who's the most apathetic looking, would Kevin win hands down?
A baby face, that would absolutely win.
He's smiling, kind
Kevin. Kevin got baby face. Someone said that your look was a CNI, completely not interested face.
Were you talking about me?
Yeah.
Plus, no, you know, people don't understand. That's as alert as I look.
Yes.
That's a condition, too, now? CNI?
There have been a few of you all look like you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No, true that.
That's true.
And
imagine what we'd look like without the Jenison.
Right, I was just saying, don't judge us by that.
Yeah.
Now, this is just the comments from Mary's picture alone.
How long?
By the way, so people don't think we're beating up on Mary. Mary volunteered that she would win this competition down.
And I have no problem with it.
Mary, I love you. I think Mary's one of the nicest people.
Okay,
I really do. Mary's
just not.
Smiling is just not something I do.
If there's
all the time.
A moment of awkwardness in the room, Andrea feels like she has to throw out a compliment.
I don't want Mary to feel bad.
No, she doesn't feel bad.
I don't
she
feel
owns
bad.
It. She owns it.
I look like a crab most of the time.
Clearly, this is the best prediction anyone has ever made on this show. This is just Mary's, just under Mary's photo on Facebook. Yes, it's you, Mary. Dave, second place. We have a winner. Sorry, Mary. Tie between Mary and Dave. Those eyes are the definition of bitch, please. LOL.
Wait. Your expression's wrong.
Seriously?
It's the definition of bitch, please.
Bitch, please.
Yes.
Oh.
Mary looks great. You need a you've got to be kidding me bubble with this photo. Mary, don't be sad. that we think you have RBF, be happy that you're a winner.
What do I get?
These are funny.
Tremendous. Oh. We'll check this list out one more time before.
I love you people.
It's up. Go to Facebook.com, Steve Cochran Show, or at Cochran Show, and see if you agree that Mary has RBF and needs a lot of help. We're going to do a radiothon
for
it.
It's not going to work. No cure. There is no cure for it.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
Want to remind you again that the first caller this morning, first caller every morning wins something. First caller this morning won a variety sampler pack of sweet and savory treats from Sweet Alley, Chicagoland's only dedicated and certified gluten-free bakery located in Hinsdale, and online at sweetallies.com. That's A-L-I-S, sweetallies, A-L-I-S, .com. And a pair of tickets to the Chicago Auto Show, February 13th through the 21st. At McCormick Place, courtesy of Fifth Third Bank, member FDIC, an exclusive bank of the show. Plus a Chevy Drive, Chicago.com, and WGN Radio stainless steel travel mug. And a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers, all to start the show today. At 9:42, Andre will be in New Hampshire next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And anything we need to know about that trip?
Well, just a couple of real quick things that you're going to need to know.
Oh, New Hampshire, your forests of green. Your sandy beaches, the cleanest I've seen.
Is that Ted Cruz?
Your clear lakes and streams and crisp mountain air.
But you didn't think I'd find a New Hampshire song.
Maybe some better bug, I don't know where.
How about that? That's the O New Hampshire original song by the New Hampshire. That's by the New Hampshire balladeer Jim Barnes.
I got to tell you, Jim may be driving down voter turnout.
About that, Iowa may be first in the nation when it comes to caucusing. By the way, I'm calling this prepping for the primary. The New Hampshire primary is the first in a series of nationwide party primary elections held every 4 years. State law requires that the New Hampshire primary must be first in the nation. First primary in the nation since 1920. Now, before the Iowa caucuses first got the national attention in the 70s, the New Hampshire primary was the first binding indication of which presidential candidate would get the party nomination. Now, voters of New Hampshire have tended to downplay the importance of the Iowa caucuses. Tell me if you can remember who said this maybe not so famous quote.
Why, how come
in 1988.
Jim's still singing? Why is Jim still singing? Shut up, Jim.
Okay, who said this? This is a quote. The people of Iowa picked the corn. The people of New Hampshire picked the presidents.
I know who that is.
1988. Any guesses?
I know who that is. Do you know, Dave? I'm going to give you some help.
Okay.
People
it's
of
a former
Iowa.
Governor of New Hampshire that rhymes with Sununu.
Governor Sununu.
Edward.
That's unbelievable.
That's a great
clue. Absolutely
John Sununu?
John Sununu.
He became a cabinet member.
He became the Bush chief of staff for a period of time. Okay. Bush
you
1.
You guys are good, but okay. That was his infamous quote. People of Iowa pick the corn. The people of New Hampshire pick the president.
I had a Sununu removed at a doctor.
I don't think that's
remember,
true
if your Sununu is irregularly shaped and it could be an indication that you've spent too much time in the sun, get in and get it cut off you.
This is supposed to help people. The primary measures the number of votes each candidate receives directly rather than through precinct delegates. The popular vote gives lesser candidates a chance to demonstrate their appeal to the electorate at large.
Got it.
It's a little bit of prepping for the primary. We'll continue that tomorrow and Friday as well. Get you all ready for the New Hampshire primary.
9:45, we come back. Harold Debo has taught some of the finest actors and actresses in Chicago to grow up, be big stars, and occasionally not pay their bills. What? Carol will come back in a second and talk a little bit about you, mom and dad, about your kid and whether or not your kid ought to be chasing this dream. And if it's your dream, maybe it's not their dream. 9:45, this is 720 WGN. Carol Debo's here, and the Actors Training Center, We Train to Work, is actorstrainingcenter.com. How are you, Carol?
I'm great.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Welcome back from Los Angeles.
Oh, thanks. I was in La La Land.
You know, I think we can say this now. Kevin Spacey, as the president of the United States in House of Cards, Do I have to worry about a spoiler alert from last season? I mean, shouldn't
you
people
might,
have
no,
seen
people
it?
Have, no,
yes,
no,
yes.
Yeah, you have to worry about
I've,
it.
I've got like two episodes left.
Yeah, don't do
but
that.
But I have to finish the 30 for 30 Bears thing first.
There's a woman on the show that plays a hooker with a heart of gold.
The
hooker with a heart of gold is a terrific Chicago actress who also had a prominent role in Manhattan, another fine Tribune product. But anyway, the hooker with a heart of gold's name is?
Rachel Brosnahan.
And Rachel is
she prefers to go by call girl, not hooker.
She was my, Steve Beck will back me up, my favorite character on that show.
That's true. That's true.
And when she was, oh, how do I not spoil
careful,
this?
Careful, careful, careful.
She
when
might
she,
not
when
be,
she had a rough episode.
When she had a rough episode.
Rough.
Very rough episode. I was so upset. I said to Steve, oh, my God, I can't watch anymore.
I read that rough episode, and I knew she was going to have a rough episode, and I had a hard time watching that episode.
I cried.
Well, she's terrific. She's a terrific actress.
So was that with Doug Stamper?
Yeah, Doug
okay,
Stamper.
I did see that. Okay.
And he's a great actor, and Steve was going to have him on. I said, we cannot have him on because of Rachel's rough episode.
Well, you know, they had a rough episode together because they're very close friends, so that was really tough for them to shoot. Really, really tough. But
we
didn't
spoil
amazing.
It for you, so no. I don't want to hear from anybody. You have all sorts of classes that you're teaching for all levels of kids to get into this business and to do well in this business. However, I want to say one of the things that I respect very much about Carol is that she's not interested in taking your money so your kid has a place to be babysat or so that your kid has a place to come in and live your dream. This is somebody who really wants to teach kids about the joy of becoming an actor or an actress. And as you say, we train to work. So what do you want to say to parents?
Just tread carefully and don't push. You can really get signals from kids. I can tell, especially with the younger kids, when the parents bring them in, that they'd rather be on the soccer field, they'd rather be at home or with their friends. The kids that come in and really embrace the classes do well. But I see all the time parents who are really pushing their kids into this, and it's often their dream and not the kid's dream.
Yeah, and by the way, that doesn't make you a bad person or a bad parent. However, it is a waste of your kid's time and a waste of time and stress on you to not recognize that this is not going to be their life path. And if they wake up in the morning and they want to play pretend if they're little, if they're a little bit older and they want to be in the school play, all of those things that are signs, if they talk about it at home, if you find them recreating scenes or if they're writing stuff that they think are scripts, those are all indicators, right?
Absolutely. I will say, however, the kids that want to do their community theater, want to do their high school theater, sometimes that's just what they want to do. They want the social experience. They're not really thinking about a career in this. They don't want to be dragged downtown for an audition at 3 o'clock. I have kids in this last session, one who was at Drury Lane, one who was at Paramount, and one who was at the Goodman. And these kids were going to school, getting picked up at 3 o'clock for it, and then had a 6 o'clock call, doing a show, getting home at midnight, and doing this 8 shows a week and getting their homework done in the car. These kids love it. But that's a rare kid. It's really rare. And parents have to be so careful not to push your kid. I can tell if I'm teaching, a parent will ask me, how are they doing? How are they doing? What do you think? Are they ready for an agent? Big warning signs. Big warning signs. Parents who want their kids to get an agent after they've taken one class, it's not an innate ability. It's an innate ability with training. So it doesn't come naturally. You just have to have it and then train for it. And those parents that are really pushy, these kids don't do well. I mean, I had a parent once. I sent her down to go get something for the child to eat because she brought him to the studio. I looked at the kid. I said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want to get out of here."
Oh.
And I said to the mom, "He doesn't want to be here." She said, "Well, you know, he says that, but I think he really does."
There were kids recently in Beautiful who played Carol King, you know, a young Carol King, and then On Your Feet, you know, the Gloria Estefan bio, where there was a little boy, and they had so much energy, and all I thought was, oh, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
They're not in bed.
They're not in bed. They're not getting in bed till 12:30
but they
by
were
the time they get out of there.
Unbelievably talented. Don't get me wrong. I just wondered how they did it.
There's just something that they have, a passion. They love it. They feed off of it. One of my students, he was in a show. I think he was in A Christmas Carol at the Goodman, and he was up for a role on Chicago PD. And we had to coach at 8 in the morning. And this was a scene where there's a guy with a bullet wound in his leg, and he has to take his shirt off and stuff his shirt into the bullet hole. 8 in the morning, we're coaching this. And he booked it, and that's pressure. Little kid on set having to do all these things, but he can do it.
And nudging your kid towards that is way different than pushing them into it when they tell you they really don't want to be a part of it. But in the same way that a kid wakes up and wants to go play baseball, or a kid wakes up and wants to go play football, or a kid wakes up and wants to do music, play an instrument, whatever.
And sometimes kids just want to explore different avenues.
Yeah. Especially now.
Especially at these ages. So let them take a class. Let them take an improv class.
I want to ask you about one of these.
What do you want to know about?
It's not the improv one. To me, you got a 6th, 7th, or 8th grader, a middle schooler. That is a key age for a kid to start to figure out what path they might want to take through school, figure their life out in high school with all those associated challenges, and maybe help direct themselves down a road that could lead to a school. You do a thing called Actor's Toolbox in the summer. To me, that's a great way for kids to figure out if this is for them.
It is. And we put in a lot of different skill sets in there, so they bounce around a little bit. They have different teachers. And they get to see a little bit about scene study and about monologue work. And it's really important. And that's a very popular class. That's
because you get a little bit of everything.
It's a little poo-poo platter.
Yeah. You're a poo-poo platter.
Oh, Steve, you say the nicest things.
It's the Actors Training Center. We train to work winter, spring, and summer. And actorstrainingcenter.com is a great place to go for this. If people want to get a copy of this handy program,
they should just reach out to us. You can find us on – actually, we're actorstrainingcenter.org now because we are not for profit.
Okay, so it's .org.
Yeah, we also have – you know, in our summer programs, we do more intensive things. So we are having – we're holding auditions in February for our musical Big. And we are actually flying in a choreographer from New York to choreograph it. We have a Chicago director who's directing it. And it's a real slice of what it's like because this guy directs all over Chicago. And then we're bringing in a choreographer. And we also have an original cast member from Big coming in to meet with the kids.
Oh, cool.
So those auditions are in February. But we're pretty careful, you know, who we let in to these things.
Anything else we should look for with Rachel?
I'm not saying right now.
Oh, you can't say yet.
I can't say. She's got some pretty big meetings today.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Tell her we love her.
I will tell her you love her. We'll get her on the air one time. She would love to. We ever get her back to Chicago.
She was back. She was on once a while ago. Yeah,
I think on the phone. She did it.
Yeah, we get her in studio.
Yeah, you get her on the, yeah.
Isn't her husband an actor, too?
Okay, they're not married yet.
Oh, boyfriend.
The fiancé.
Fiancé.
Yeah, he's on the sci-fi series Magicians. He's got the lead in that right now.
Cool.
So they were
it's a busy household.
They don't see each other much. Yeah. They are. He was shooting in Vancouver. She was shooting in Santa Fe. They don't see each other
great
much.
Great way to decide if they want to get married, I guess. Right?
I think that speaks to a very long-term relationship.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. How long have we been dating?
Weren't we going to get married 40
exactly.
years ago?
Carol Debo, best way to go is to drop an email to where again?
Just email us at info@actorstrainingcenter.
Okay, info@actorstrainingcenter.com.
.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill and Wendy, in a moment. Stay around and say hi to them. They love you, too. It's 9:58 on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy are here. Did I forget anything, Kevin, or have we done everything we can do here?
We gave it a full 100% effort today. I think we're through, Steve.
Boy, if that's 100%, they are overpaying me.
I thought you did a great job.
100%. Steve. We never give 100%, do we, Bill?
I don't.
Well, but you do over the course of the two shows.
No.
Not really.
So if you add up the 10 to noon and then the 1 to 3, it's not 100?
35, 40 at best.
Tops.
Really?
Absolute tops.
Wow, and I thought I was overpaid.
I have to tell you, I drive into work with Darren Pang, Muggsy Bogues, and Webster, and you insulted all three of them. Within a span of 15 seconds this morning.
It was Gary Coleman, not Webster.
Well, I used to drive in with Gary Coleman. But
don't you think Gary Coleman would be a great goalie?
Emmanuel Lewis.
Yeah, Emmanuel Lewis.
Is Gary Coleman gone? Is he no longer
He's
with
gone.
Us?
He's gone.
Oh, I'm sorry then.
Yeah.
I regret what I just said.
He only had one pallbearer.
I refuse
so
to laugh at that and encourage you. That's wrong in a bunch of different ways.
We ready to give our 12%?
Yeah, right about now.
Starts now, 12% till noon. Here's Bill and Wendy.